Thank you. I realize I'm in between you and coffee, so I'll try to make it as interesting as possible so you don't fall asleep. So I'd like to talk today about our determination of the mass of dust in Cassay based on our spatially resolved analysis of the Herschel photometry data. So the motivation of our study is that first people thought that the primary source for ISM dust were just evolved AGB stars, but then people started to detect a lot of dust in high redshift galaxies, and then supernova in particular type 2 were proposed as additional dust sources. And it seems that we would need that a single supernova needs to produce between 0.1 and 1 solar mass of dust to be able to account for the dust mass that is observed in some high redshift galaxies. Now, the dust production rate of supernova is actually very uncertain, and for a long time there has been a discrepancy between models and observations. So models have been able to account for dust production between 0.1 and 1 solar mass of dust per single supernova, which would be able to account for the dust mass observed at high redshift. But before the launch of Herschel, we only detected dust in supernova remnants up to 1/100 of a solar mass, so definitely not sufficient to account for the dust observed at high redshift. Now, with the launch of Herschel and the advent of ALMA, people did start to detect the colder dust in supernova remnants, such as in supernova 1987A, Crab Nebula, and Cassay. So there were a few observational cases where we did detect more dust, and so this could confirm the models. Now, Cassay has been observed extensively, and people have come up with very different dust masses based on different observations, and I'll give you a short overview before I start talking about our work. So based on the SCUBA 850 micron observations, you can see the map here, Loretta Dunn derived in 2003 dust mass between 2 and 4 solar masses of dust in Cassay at a temperature of 18 Kelvin. Now, 1 year later, Oliver Krauss showed that most of the 850 micron emission could probably be attributed to foreground dust. So you can, based on this clear correlation between the gas column density that was derived from OH absorption and dust column density. Then based on GCMT 850 micron polarization data, Loretta Dunn again derived a dust mass of 1 solar mass of dust based on an excess in polarization. So most of the dust was thought to be distributed here on the west side and in the north. Based on Spitzer and Spitzer photometry and IRS spectra, people could then determine a dust mass of 0.04 solar mass of warm silicate dust in the shocked regions, and they also found evidence for the presence of up to 0.1 solar mass of dust in the inner unshocked ejecta. From the Spitzer IRS spectra, it was also very interesting to see the different dust spectra that we could observe within Cassay. So you can see here the variety of dust spectra, which all represent maybe different grain compositions that were observed in Cassay. From the Spitzer IRS spectra, they also derived that most of the dust is probably silicate-type grains with some contribution from amorphous carbon and other grains like corundum or hibernate. Then in 2010, Mike Barlow presented a global analysis of the Herschel Paxson Spire photometry, and they derived a dust mass of 0.075 solar mass of dust at a temperature of 35 Kelvin in the inner regions. So you see here the Pax maps and the Spire maps, and it's already interesting to have a look here. The morphology is very different in these six maps that you can see. So in the Pax 70 micron, you see that the emission is clearly dominated by the warm dust in the shocked ejecta, but then moving to the spire wavebands and already at Pax 160 micron, you clearly can see that the morphology is completely different and we're completely dominated there by ISM dust emission. So from these literature studies, we can conclude that there are large disagreements between the dust mass that is derived for Cassay, so the dust mass that it has formed in Cassay. One reason is that we definitely need longer wavelength data to really detect the colder dust in Cassay. But on the other hand, it's also really difficult to separate these four different emission components that can contribute to all of these maps. We have a contribution from supernova dust emission, which we're interested in, but there's synchrotron radiation as well, a large contribution from ISM dust emission, as you can see, and line emission as well. So in our new approach, we want to do a spatially resolved analysis of all these different emission components by using Pax and Spire photometry data, as well as spectra. Also, we use the Spitzer data, Planck data, and the Weiss data. So I'll walk you through our modeling now. I'll show how we model each of these different components. So the synchrotron radiation, for this we use the recent Planck data to redetermine the spectral index of the synchrotron spectrum, as you can see here, so fitted to the Planck data, and we extrapolate that model by using a 3.7 millimeter image to extrapolate it to infrared and submillimeter data. So you see here our synchrotron template that is used at 500 micron. Then for the light emission, we use Spitzer IRS spectra, PAX IFU, as you can see here, the O3 line emission determined from PAX IFU, and Spire FDS data to determine what the contribution is of line emission to broadband fluxes. So this is, in particular, has been shown to be important for the PAX 100 micron band, where we have a non-negligible contribution from the O3 line. So I won't go into too much detail here to not run out of time. I'll go to the most important component that we really want to model accurately, which is the ISM dust component. So we've seen that this clearly dominates in the Spire waveband, so we want to make sure that we model this very accurately. We've chosen to use the Spire 500 micron image as an ISM dust density tracer. So you see here the ISM template that we use to constrain the dust density in the ISM. We've also tested this, so we've done SED modeling of all the regions around CASE, and we found a very nice correlation between the 500 micron flux density and the ISM dust mass. I do need to say that this 500 micron flux has been corrected for synchrotron radiation. Now we have our dust density tracer, the Spire 500 micron image. Now we need an SED template. So we're using the Jones et al. Dust model, which consists of a combination of hydrocarbons and amorphous silicates. So the grain composition and optical properties of this dust model has been calibrated on the Milky Way, so we're fairly sure that it will work to model the dust around CASE. And you see here an example of the template that is used. Now we have our composition of dust, but we need to know to what temperature this ISM dust is heated. So this can be expressed, or this can be determined by determining the scaling factor of the radiation field that is heating the dust. So we express this in units of the Hebbing field, which is the Fourier V radiation field, and Hebbing field, so 1 G0 is actually equal to the radiation field that we have in our solar neighborhood, and more or less corresponds to a dust temperature of 18 Kelvin. So this corresponds to the red curve that you see here. But we also explore lower scaling factors, so for 0.3 G0, which corresponds to almost 15 Kelvin. You can see here this is the dotted line. So we've scaled all of these templates to the same Spire 500 micron flux, but as you can see, if you look at 100 and 160 micron, there's actually a huge difference in the emission of the ISM dust just by changing the temperature from 15 Kelvin to 18 Kelvin. So just this 3 Kelvin difference in temperature will make a huge difference in our modeling. So we want to make sure that we constrain the radiation field very well. So we've taken two different approaches to constrain the radiation field that is heating the ISM dust. First approach is by modeling the different regions in the field that we have observed with Herschel around CASE. So we've taken CASE out here, and we've modeled all the regions around it, and this shows you the scaling factor for the radiation field that we obtain from this SED modeling. So we see that G varies from 0.2 G0 up to 2.4 G0 in the entire field, but if we look in the immediate vicinity of CASE, we see that the radiation field changes from 0.3 G0 up to about 1 G0, so what we have in our solar neighborhood. A second method to determine G0 was based on PDR modeling. So we've done PDR modeling from the 2C1 transitions and CO4-3 line that were detected in the ISM near CASE from our Herschel Spire FTS data. So we've used the PDR toolbox to do our PDR modeling and determine the best fitting gas density and radiation field. So the circles that you see here corresponds to the beams of the Spire FTS detector for which we could obtain a spectra. So we could obtain a spectrum for each of these circles. And as you can see, we are mostly interested in the radiation field. We again get a value of 0.6 G0 that more or less fits the data best. So from these two independent approaches, we both seem to find that a temperature of 16.4 Kelvin seems to best represent the ISM dust temperature. So now we've modeled all of our components. We're ready to start doing SED fitting. So in a first step, we subtract the line and synchrotron radiation. Then in a second step, we construct a four-component SED model consisting of an ISM model, which I just presented, and a three-component supernova model with different temperatures. So we have a hot, a warm, and a cold component. We will repeat this modeling on global and resolved scales, and we'll mainly focus on the ISM model with a radiation field of 0.6 G0, but we'll also do the modeling for the other ISM models just to have an idea what the uncertainty is on the dust mass, and we'll use various dust species. So you can see here the dust mass absorption coefficient as a function of wavelength for the various dust species that we explore, and in the infrared there's a huge variety which will of course have an effect on the dust mass that we derive. Now, you can see from the global fits that we derive here. So if we look at the ISM model with 1 G0, we see that this is actually maximizing the ISM contribution. So in red, you see our ISM model, and the other colors are the three different supernova dust models that we use. We also see that the supernova dust mass that we derive strongly depends on the dust composition. So we have explored more different dust species in the modeling, but I'm showing just four here to show you how strong the dust mass might be affected by the dust species that we assume. For instance, we can rule out that this dust composition will be the dominant dust species in Cassay simply because it's not possible to have a dust mass of 50 solar masses in Cassay. So we've determined here as well the maximum dust mass that we can expect to find in Cassay for these various dust species based on nucleosynthesis models. And so in the second column here, you see the best fitting dust mass that we derive from our global fits. We find a temperature around 30 Kelvin for these two silicate type grains. And the lower dust mass here corresponds to an SED model where we basically force our ISM model to reproduce all of the 500 micron flux, leaving no room for a supernova dust contribution at 500 micron. So this can be considered as a strict lower limit, since we do expect some supernova dust contribution at 500 micron, since it's already been shown that there is likely to be a supernova dust contribution at 850 micron. We've also done resolved SED modeling, so we've convolved all of our maps to the Spire 500 micron resolution, which corresponds to 36 arc seconds. If we use the nominal pixel size in the Spire map, so 14 arc second pixels, we have 438 resolution elements in Cassay. So you see the resulting maps that we obtain from the SED modeling here. This is the cold dust mass map, warm dust mass map, hot dust mass map, or total dust mass map, which corresponds to a sum of these three components, and the cold dust temperature map. So you see that most of the dust seems to be at a temperature of about 30 Kelvin, but there are some regions where it is warmer up to 35, and some colder regions where it is more down to 25 Kelvin. Most interesting is to have a look at this total dust mass map. So I hope you can see it, but I've indicated here the reverse shock region and the forward shock. And interesting is to see that we find most of the cold dust in the reverse shock region, and that's actually what we would expect as well, because we expect part of the dust to be destroyed by the reverse shock. So this, I think, shows that our modeling is working very well. We have some plumes here of dust as well, which seem to be aligned with the jets in Cassay. So I think that's something interesting we should have a look at later to see whether these features are real. So I'll skip over this. This is just to quickly show you that our observations and model agree very well. We also have a nice chart that we made to show you the different contributions to the emission for Cassay. So we see that at PAX 160 micron and the Spire wavelengths, we're clearly dominated by ISM dust, while supernova dust contribution is only 4% at Spire 500 micron, so it's really, really low. Then the main results that you can take away from this study. So we've also confirmed that silicate type dust seems to fit best for Cassay. We can rule out various dust species based on nucleosynthesis models, showing us that we won't have the material available in Cassay to have sufficient dust mass for these species to model the SCDs. We've also shown that we find most of the coal dust within the reverse shock region, showing that dust destruction is going on in the reverse shock. And then this shows our best fitting models, and I would focus here on the spatially resolved fits, because as I showed before, the spectra for Cassay are clearly changing a lot depending on which location you're looking at in Cassay. So the best way to model this is on a spatially resolved scale, and the best fits that we get for the silicate type grains give us dust masses of 0.5 up to 0.7 solar masses of dust. So this would be sufficient to explain the dust that we observe at high redshift, even the lower limits that we would get, which are strict lower limits, would allow us to explain the dust that is observed in the early universe, if, of course, not most of this dust is destroyed by the reverse shock and if it's produced by other supernova remnants as well. Then a very short future outlook. We'll be doing SED modeling as well based on a Spitzer-IF-FTS spectra, where we have continuous spectra up to 650 microns, so hopefully we can constrain the dust emissivity and the type of the grains in Cassay better based on this spectra. And as Mike Barlow already mentioned, we'll be also going to the optical to increase statistics and get better constraints on the dust mass in a lot more supernova remnants. Thank you very much.
Questions?
Elsa, mission accomplished in keeping things interesting. Could you go to the slide showing the images? Yes,
this one.
And to the total dust mass, and you showed it interior to the reverse shock. Now that's very interesting. One issue there's been a lot of interest in trying to find a surviving companion of Cassay, and one thought has always been perhaps there's an unusual dust content towards the center that could be hiding it. With this kind of result, maybe substantiate that thought.
Okay.
I'm asking you...
Whether it's possible to hide...
Yes, would that contribute towards the extinction in this region?
So based on the dust mass that we get here, I haven't derived an AV map, but that would be interesting to do to determine what the extinction is.
That would be very interesting.
I can't answer your question right now, but that's something to have a look at for sure.
Okay, Jakob.
So actually, now I see this plot again, and I think of another question as well. It seems like the total dust seems to be where also the H1 or the free absorption is in the radio. So there seems to be a high concentration of mass there, the hot spot in the total mass. Yes.
Here you mean, yes.
Well, you know, we have to align, but my other question is actually, or my other remark is that if you look at the X-ray spectra of the X-ray spectrum of Cassay, there's a lot of silicon and there's a lot of sulfur, and these two should trace each other. So I would be surprised that in the X-ray emitting matter that most of the silicon is actually in dust. So that also would put a constraint, I think, on the total dust or the total mass of silicon in dust grains.
Yeah, that's true. So normally a maximum we would expect for ansatite would be 1.4. But of course, we've already discussed this before, the nucleosynthesis models need to be updated. So this is really... has a huge error bar, let's say. So,
So Cassay probably had a mass of about 4 solar masses ejecta, maybe 2 solar masses of oxygen, and then about a fifth of that would be silicon. And maybe you can put 0.5 or 0.2 of that silicon, I think, in dust. I don't think you can play a little bit around, but not too much, I would say.
No, but that's the values that we obtain. So the global SED fit, of course, I mean, you're really combining very different spectrum in one integrated spectrum. So, of course, this has larger uncertainty, so I would rely on a spatially resolved map, especially because the maps that we get are really give us very interesting results and could be very reasonable since we get most of the dust within the reverse unshocked regions.
Okay, thank you.
Last question all the way in back. Oh, well, let's do Bill first and then Skylar.
Mine is real short. I just want to understand, is it only... Is the dust clearly behind the reverse shock, or is it just in projection inside the reverse shock? It could be foreground or background, or do you know it's in within?
Okay, yeah, we don't have any way of constraining here whether it's, we only have the projected image, of course, yeah, so there's no way of constraining, but I guess it's inside, because otherwise you would never expect to find so much dust there.
Hi, this is amazingly comprehensive work, very nice. You had a chart there showing the fraction of, I think it was right there, is that one? No, you had like the contribution as a function of wavelengths of the dust. Oh, this is it, yeah. So most of the contribution is at PEC 70, it looks like, so at about 70 microns.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, so I've maybe not mentioned this before, but we also, our model seems to fit all of the Spire and PUX data very well, but does not fit the SCUBA 850 micron. And we've tried to include the SCUBA 850 micron in our fits, but it doesn't seem to work at all. So it seems that those data points are really offset. And, well, you can see it maybe better even here as well. So I think an interesting thing to do would be to reapply to get new 850 micron observations.
All right, let's thank Ilse and all of the speakers.